Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Radio Archives, and welcome to From the Vault, our weekly series that takes the history out of the oldest and largest collections of public radio programming in the United States and puts it back on the radio. The violence that is erupting across the country during this political presidential election campaign season is something that the country hasn't seen for a long time. We thought we would take a look back on what we thought was the most volatile convention to date. The Pacifica Radio Archives and From the Vault presents A Night in Chicago, the 1968 Democratic National Convention in Chicago, Illinois.
I quite seriously think this is the most barbarous and outrageous goddamn thing I have seen in 25 years of seeing goddamned outrageous things all over the world. I have never seen anything so brutal as this.
That was James Cameron, who is visiting Studs Terkel from London. He was tear-gassed and got a tooth knocked out for his effort to observe American politics that week in 1968. In this classic Pacifica radio documentary, you will feel the heat of the summer, the sweat on the brow, the tension and brutality as the events unfold at the 1968 Democratic National Convention, seen through our on-the-ground field recordings. You will be a witness to the demonstrations in the streets and parks of Chicago in 1968, as if you were there. The program ends with a poignant interview with Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman, who will put the importance of Pacifica Radio's perspective into context, different from all other news agencies. Here to introduce this award-winning documentary, A Night in Chicago, is Amy Goodman.
In a perfectly clear example of the differences between the events inside the convention in Chicago and those outside, this coverage from within the convention hall, hosted by Pacifica reporters Steve Bookchester and Dale Miner, shows that even on a supposedly eventful day, the pace is slow and the excitement minimal. But out on the streets, Pacifica reporters were in their element, covering the quickly changing action, the fiery speeches, and the violence. Throughout the 1960s, in Pacifica Radio, one name seemed to always be connected to the biggest events of that decade, Elsa Knight Thompson. True to form, she produced an award-winning documentary called A Night in Chicago about the events outside the convention that summer in 1968. This recording is universally acknowledged as one of the most quintessential Pacifica programs in the archives collection.
Early yesterday evening, a marching line of demonstrators, two blocks long, 25 abreast, attempted to get down LaSalle Street to Grant Park, opposite Democratic headquarters in the Conrad Hilton. After attending a Black Panther rally, at which Bobby Seale, national chairman of the Panthers, spoke.
Revolution in this country that's occurring is in fact people coming forth to demand freedom. The revolution that's occurring, and especially that the Black Panther, the message that the Black Panther Party sends forth, is also directly connected
were divided and partially dispersed when they encountered a police barricade at LaSalle and Goethe. About half the crowd did reform and make its way through to Grant Park. The rest returned to Lincoln Park. Downtown in the Coliseum, a non-birthday party for LBJ took place in the early part of the evening, where a number of speakers, including Dave Dellinger, Jean Genet, Terry Southern, Allen Ginsberg, Abby Hoffman, and Dick Gregory were heard.
And I hope when you leave here, you don't talk about the Chicago police. You don't talk about Richard Elrod. They ain't nothing but a bunch of German soldiers. The number one Nazi is Mayor Richard J. Daley, and don't you never forget that. And I say to you tonight, had there been a bunch of young people that challenged Hitler the way you challenging Mayor Richard J. Daley, it might be a whole lot of Jews alive today. And I say to you, I'm glad that you came here, because a lot of you got a lesson firsthand. A lot of you really didn't realize what you was stuck in. A lot of you. And this fool gave the keynote address. Let me tell you young folks something. You went this far with Eugene, but don't never let nobody trick you into the Democratic Party again. So I say to you youngsters, you got a job. You got a hell of a job, because I can't even stand here as a 36-year-old American and say that us older folks even started the job for you. You got a hell of a job on your hands. And I hope Chicago proved to you what you got to do.
The large crowd leading this gathering swelled the ranks of those already assembled at both Grant and Lincoln Parks. Curfew during the convention in both these parks is 11 p.m. It is a fact I offer without comment that there has been virtually no police violence against the demonstrators in Grant Park facing the major hotels. Last night was a case in point, as this interview indicates.
And I'm now standing in Grant Park, where there's a fairly large convocation of people outside of the Hilton Hotel. The delegates seem to be, or some people, obviously the delegates must be in the convention now, but there are some people who are craning out of the windows of the hotel. Doesn't seem to be very much happening here. The only indication that there may perhaps be some action is that there are... sprinkled in this crowd of, how many would you say there are? To about 2,000 people, there are a few hundred people who have Vaseline smeared on their faces and seem to be ready. And I have a feeling if someone's wearing what they think is a mace mask, they might be prepared to risk it. But at the moment, the crowd doesn't seem to be offering anything more than shouts of, hey, hey, LBJ, and what do you want, and we want it now. Young man with Ted Kennedy button on is lying up against a tree, and a call from medic just went out. There is a very large medical contingent here.
But in Lincoln Park, the police moved in force and under circumstances requiring some explanation. Earlier in the day, a group of 25 clergy, representing all denominations, acting in cooperation with a concerned citizens group, had announced that they would hold religious services in Lincoln Park beginning at 11 o'clock. And it is estimated that at least 400 clergymen were in the park as the police moved in. Pacifica reporters take up the story.
This is Bob Fass, and we've returned to the Lincoln Park area. There's been a worship service being conducted in the park. 25 clergymen of all denominations from Chicago have been conducting a worship service in the park, and it's now 12:30. That means that the curfew has been in effect for an hour and a half, and it looks as though the hastily assembled interdenominational congregation is being moved out of the park by the police. Can you tell me what's been happening so far tonight?
Not a thing. Nothing came through. Not a thing. Nice, normal operation.
Penny, do you mind telling me what's been happening so far this evening?
So far this evening, there are a group of clergymen in there holding a worship service with very many people sitting around. I'd hate to say how many.
Is the service still going on?
The service is still going on.
And have you had any kind of assurances from the police that you'll be undisturbed?
No.
That will be what?
That you'll be undisturbed?
No, the police have done the opposite. They said that any clergyman found in the park will be arrested.
Anybody found in the park will be arrested, clergyman or non-clergyman.
Right.
Thank you very much. You were just telling me while we were
recording was off
that there was a minister beaten last night.
There's a seminary student studying to become a minister who was beaten last night. He's in the hospital right now with a fractured skull.
Was that the motivation for this meeting tonight?
Not necessarily, no. The meeting was going to take place whether that happened or not.
People seem to be leaving the park very rapidly now. And I heard a light explosion that might have been a tear gas canister. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
This is Phil Watson back on the scene at Lincoln Park. After arriving here, I ran into Allen Ginsberg and Jean Lenay as they ran out of the worship service that was being conducted here. The demonstrators are now ripping down trees as the police, it seems, moved in and began to shoot tear gas into the park to break up the service. You can smell the tear gas. Some of the demonstrators went back into the park and started some of the demonstrators ran back into the park with a few sticks. The police are now moving across in a rank, shooting tear gas. Some of the kids are ripping off leaves. They're holding their faces. You can see the tear gas in the air. They have large fire trucks with lights. The gas is around. My eyes are beginning to burn a little bit. I'm going to walk over. The police are walking forward with rifles and clubs out. They are moving over with gas masks. The area is completely lighted up. There's trucks with multiple lights on it. They have shot off tear gas. As I mentioned earlier, Allen Ginsberg and John Lindsay came around at my feet just now, it seems, was a tear gas or some kind of instrument. There's now a line of police helmets. The light truck has been brought forward. There are a few brave photographers and others in the middle. I am now in line between the demonstrators on one side. I'm going to get out of the way a little bit as a few of the demonstrators are throwing rocks, etc. I had to quickly retreat as someone began to throw a few cans. I want to get close enough so that they can see that it's Pacifica radio here and not police radio. You can begin to now feel the gas. They're moving back slowly. I don't know where we are in the park. There are no street signs. The truck is now spraying. The truck is spraying. The truck is spraying a gas. The kids are now moving back into the street. And for the first time, this reporter can feel whatsoever it is that's there. They're fighting and pushing and shoving. I'm trying to get far enough back so I can see what's happening, but it's almost impossible to be able to give you a report as my eyes again the burn. Bill Watson here, and I'm going to have to... God damn.
Oh, excuse me. There seems the crowd is running. The crowd is running very, very rapidly toward us here. They are leaving the park very, very quickly. I see Allen Ginsberg and Jean Genet. Allen, can you talk to me? I understand that you've lost your voice, so I understand. What? The police charge?
Yeah, with gas and I think smoke bombs, too. We weren't close enough, believe me, to see exactly what they were doing.
Well, what did you hear? Explosions and...
Gas grenades, mostly gas grenades. And they were coming motorized. They weren't walking. Some were walking, some were riding either three-wheeled... motorcycles or even cars. I don't know as much as I know.
Well, they've been threatening for about an hour, haven't they?
Well, since 11 o'clock. They've been standing there, but they didn't advance until about 10 minutes ago. Exactly the same time as last night. When they advance very fast.
A non-striking truck driver is coming by and the crowd is shouting scab, scab. I see people. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Hey.
What happened?
Just over there. It looks like it's got some kind of a personnel carrier. There it comes. See with the lights? I can only see silhouettes, but I couldn't tell whether they were troops or police. I don't know. See that personnel carrier? It's got those beam lights and they're...
Yeah, is it spraying gas?
A lot of tear gas.
Is it spraying gas?
No, they got their own... I think they got their own gas guns, you know? We got tear gas guns in their hands.
Where's Jean?
I think she's upstairs. I hope so. Hope she wasn't over there.
I can smell the tear gas now. It's unmistakable. Cold water. Get cold water into your eyes as soon as you can. Stick your head right under it and get the cold water in your eyes.
Cold water in them?
Right, right. If you could find a fountain, just let the cold water come right up into your eyes.
Give me that, I'll wet it.
Oh, I'm all right. I must say.
Do you want to interview a king?
What do you guys see, huh?
I don't know how I can interview without being able to speak French.
Je ne comprends pas ce qu'il dit. Qu'est-ce qu'il dit?
I said I don't know how I can interview Monsieur Genet without being able to speak French, but I guess you're going to help me.
I could help, yes.
Where were you when this happened?
Où étiez-vous quand ça a commencé?
Tout près de la croix, à côté du des prêtres, qui étaient assis dans l'herbe.
Next to the cross, near the priests who were sitting on the ground.
And were the priests, what were the priests doing? Praying and trying to influence the universe to be a little bit more benign?
Les prêtres chantaient, ils étaient assis, ils étaient très tranquilles.
They were very peaceful and quiet, seated, trying to keep calm.
And then what happened?
Et puis, qu'est-ce qui s'est arrivé?
Je n'ai pas l'habitude des cérémonies religieuses, mais je m'étonne que des policiers troublent des cérémonies religieuses la nuit.
I don't have very much practice with religious ceremonies, but I find it strange that police interrupt religious ceremonies in the middle of the night.
Have any other comments? Would something like this happen in Paris?
Quelque chose comme ça pour y arriver à Paris?
Certainement.
Of course.
Certainement.
But nonetheless, it's strange.
Néanmoins, dit-il, c'est étrange. L'interruption dans les cérémonies religieuses, il veut dire.
Je crois qu'il faut ou être du côté des religieux ou du côté des flics.
Says one should either be on the sides of the religious-minded or the cops, one or the other.
Did you say religious-minded or blinded?
Okay, that's a pun that's impossible to translate, I'm afraid.
Thank you.
Il a fait un jeu de mots entre avec le mot qui est intraduisible.
Ah bon?
Il parlait de...
J'ai mal aux yeux. Il y a encore des gaz ici.
Thank God for those ministers tonight.
You mean the interdenominational service?
Yes, the police had to move against the cross. It's incredible. I love it. It's even funnier. Because it's like Burroughs, Genet, Terry Southern, myself. In Chicago, like a weird radio columnist, Studs Terkel, Life magazine reporters, New York Times reporters, Village Voice reporters, all of them weeping with tear gas, which is flowing up and down the streets. It's incredible. The citizens all completely freaked out.
In a way, tear gas forces you to react. It forces you to react emotionally to what's going on in the society.
Well, I don't know. It suddenly turned into some enormous comedy. And they turned into a great comedy, like it's like a class reunion of all sort of tendencies in Chicago for many years, and international tendencies in this lobby of the hotel across from the park where everybody ran to escape when the streets got filled with gas. The poor Time Life photographer was flat on his back, having his picture taken, weeping out on his ass with tear gas.
I couldn't think of the words to use.
My city, Chicago. So we go to the park often for joy and for beauty, and tonight I never saw as much ugliness and stupidity and brutality.
I can't hear. Oh, this is Studs Terkel that Bob is interviewing. Studs is the author of the best-selling book Division Street America. Excuse us for interrupting and for our technical problems. We just wanted to identify Mr. Terkel.
These finest, the boys in blue. Never dreamed that Daly would be this brutish or stupid. I heard about last night. I wasn't there, but I thought I'd go tonight just to enjoy the evening air, you know? And there was a cross. Obviously, being near a cross is very dangerous these days. And there were songs, and there were young ministers and kids enjoying themselves. I thought it'd be a nice fun... Lincoln Park, by the way, is a beautiful park near the lakefront and quite lovely. And then came the voice over the speaker warning to us, and then came our city's finest. And as my friend James Cameron, a visitor from England, says, he's over there, says it looked like Agincourt for a moment. And there they were, all lined up in battle helmets, and there were just young people, unarmed, just looking at them, really, a little furious. And the cops came along, and then came the tear gas. First time I'd never tasted it before.
And so it came twice, and... But
I guess the thing that moved me most, though, were the kids and the young ministers. Kids putting Vaseline on your eyes and giving you blankets. Really something, you know. And the young ministers giving you advice. And suddenly you realize, I guess this is a double strain in our society. The Neanderthal man of the 20th century and the possibility for enlightenment. And so I think the lines were really... The issue was joined, I think, tonight in my favorite park, Lincoln Park, Chicago. On this beautiful autumn evening. August what? August whatever it is, 20th.
I'm not sure of the date, that means that I forgot to send LBJ a birthday card this year. It's his birthday.
It's on LBJ's birthday. I haven't thought about that. Which I think is quite appropriate, which is, as it should be, I think, for all of our enlightenment. And maybe this was good for those who were there to see it. Maybe it was good. I'm just wondering about our visitors from different countries who are here. They're learning about this new world that suddenly becomes so old, almost primordial. But I enjoy the company very much, the company I'm with right now. There's a phrase, Brendan Behan phrase, could use this, you know, talking about the amphitheater, which the kids called anti-life, and I guess they're right at that, and life that is here. Brendan Behan, you say, you have your friends and I have mine. I might say, they have their friends and I have mine. I found my friends here tonight.
Thank you. That was Studs Terkel.
James Cameron from London, and the ironic thing about this is I don't even have a vote.
And how, you were in the park with someone else this afternoon, or just visiting Chicago?
I was just visiting with my friend Studs Terkel, and this was a very interesting sort of reception, I must say. I would say it was not altogether too good for the tourist industry, but the only inconvenience I suffered was I just had a tooth kicked out. But against that, I must admit that they were kind enough to give me gas first. In consequence, it was less damaging than it might have been. I quite seriously think this is the most barbarous and outrageous goddamn thing I have seen in 25 years of seeing goddamned outrageous things all over the world. I have never seen anything so brutal as this.
This is a religious worship service, I understand.
So I believe, yes. Which... probably makes it even worse.
Is that tooth all right? Are you going to... Is it,
oh, it'll be all right. If I ever find it again. Oh.
It's unfortunate.
It's a very terribly sad thing. I've been a constant visitor to this country now for 25 years, but I had never believed that this could, in fact... have been mounted an operation against a multitude of totally peaceful people. To be outraged in this fashion seems to me to be monstrous and a denial of liberty.
Do you, in seeing what's happening here, as I have gone through the crowd and between the tear gas, I'm finding the Allen Ginsbergs, I'm finding people like yourself, young people, reporters, all, as someone earlier tonight said, weeping about our society. What do you think will go from here?
I would think that this is probably the stage before the last, and that the society that should have been in a position to have been an exemplar to the whole world is now beginning to collapse before us. It has got a great future, but on a different lines from the ones that it is already running on. Something even more terrible has got to happen before things get better.
You are listening to A Night in Chicago, the 1968 Pacifica documentary about the Democratic National Convention.
In the early hours of this morning, the National Guard was moved into downtown Chicago, replacing the Chicago police. There were still large crowds in front of the Conrad Hilton Hotel, where Dale Minor took his mic at 4 a.m. this morning.
An incredible scene, as most scenes during this week in this convention city have been. We are in Grant Park, directly across the street from the Conrad Hilton Hotel. the headquarters of the Democratic Party during this week, the headquarters of the Democratic Convention, the headquarters of the Humphrey and McCarthy delegations. Cut that. The headquarters of the Humphrey and McCarthy camps. In front of the hotel, brilliant TV lights are nearly blinding as you look at them. And on both sides of the street, facing this crowd of thousands of demonstrators singing, "I ain't gonna study war no more," are helmeted National Guard troops wielding M1 rifles. Yes.
I was there before. I'm one of your volunteer workers from the station.
They just wore great rest and asked to reholster their handguns. That's it.
Because they laid tear gas down. Right now,
the pigs, who are no longer here. The people who work for the police department who are being used to enforce a police state and an armed camp in Chicago who are being used by people higher than them. Right now,
you have it?
They are hurting our brothers.
Not on
the Boston Movement Center is located in a church at 834 West Armitage Avenue. Very shortly, there were 10 men within one carbines who invaded an apartment right next to the Boston Movement Center on Armitage Avenue. They had no search warrant. They asked no questions. They made everybody lie down on the floor. They took money. They didn't ask any questions. They didn't say why they were there. We know why they were there. They were there because they can do up there what they can't do down here. And what we're going to say is, we remember our brothers. We will not forget that our brothers are up in Lincoln Park tonight, and that what happens to them happens also to us. And that what happens to them tonight will be answered by us tomorrow.
Right now, someone who has slightly different views than most of the people in the park would like to say what his view of the law is. Ladies and gentlemen, and hippies and yippies, and people, but then again, I am not discriminating against anybody. No, I want quiet. Would you please hear my views? I have spent 11 months in Vietnam. Fine. But then again, I would just like you to hear my views. Would you please keep quiet? I am not here to discriminate against anybody. I am not here to cause any trouble. I am here to voice my views. All right. Being in Vietnam for 11 months, I have seen it. Most of you people have not. Then again, I know you don't care. All right, fine. Please, please be quiet. I'd like to voice my opinion. All right. Please be quiet. I told you I don't want any violence. I'm not here to incite a riot. I just want to tell you what I think. In my opinion, I don't think Vietnam, South Vietnam, is worth the United States being there. But listen to me. We are there. We have been there for a long time. I will not shut up. Please hear my views. I want you to hear my views. All right. We have been there for a long time. We have lost a lot of American boys, men. No, they are worth a lot more than Vietnamese. These people... Listen to what I have to say.
Vietnamese people. We are talking about Vietnamese people. We're talking about American boys. Yes. I am not here to incite a riot. I'm just trying to voice my opinion. Will you please be quiet? All right, I will voice my opinion. Please don't get... Wow. All right. Since we are in this war and we have lost 25,000 men or more, don't you think, since we are in, as American citizens, as American people, leaders of tomorrow, that we should, as American citizens and leaders of tomorrow, win this war once and for all? Then I ask you one question, as American people and American citizens and leaders of tomorrow, then again, what shall we do? What shall we do about tomorrow? Shall we get out of this war? Because the streets are insane. There are too many policemen on it. There was tear gas in Lincoln Park. There was a lot of tear gas. There was so much tear gas that I had to carry my brother out of the park because he was blinded by it. I'd like to now introduce you to a minister who was also in Lincoln Park. There were 200 of them, and the first tear gas bomb fell right next to their circle. They were holding a prayer service next to a large cross.
To the demonstrators, I'd like to say I'm a Catholic priest from Minnesota. I'm 30 years old, and first of all, I apologize for the fact that there are not more of us from the clergy and from professional areas of life who are willing to stick our neck out and speak out to the feelings that I know are the same for many, many people around the world, around this country especially. First of all, a realization of something's wrong in the structure. Secondly, that we need a change. To the delegates that are within earshot, I would like to say, don't lock yourself up in your ivory towers as we of the church have so often done. Most of us have heard the Beatitudes that Christ preached. Too many of us have changed them to read as I would like to share with you the following. I was hungry and you formed a humanities club and discussed my hunger. Thank you. I was imprisoned and you crept off quietly to your chapel in the cellar and prayed for my release. I was naked and in your mind you debated the morality of my appearance. I was sick, and you knelt and thanked God for your health. I was lonely, and you left me alone to pray for me. I was murdered, and you shed a tear for me. You seem so holy, so close to God, but I am still very hungry and lonely and cold.
Amen.
I'd like to sum up by saying, the delegates, I would ask you to listen to the voice of the prophet. many people who are afraid, who have too much to lose, too much to compromise, and therefore are not willing to speak out. Delegates, listen to these. They're all over the country. To the demonstrators, I'd ask that we be calm. Try to, first of all, work through the structure, through the system. Do the best that we can by acting as responsible human beings. There are no pigs on either side this fence, and it doesn't help to call either side pigs. Because I haven't had a shower in a few days either, and I'm used to having one every day. But getting involved here, I came up from Minnesota because I felt there were a lot of things that are not being represented. We had the unit rule in Minnesota. I was involved in politics there, and the ratio of the delegation, 38.5 to 13.5, does not represent the people of Minnesota. There's been a lot of backroom politics. One senator told me as I got involved in politics that you have to realize that there are politics on both sides of the issue. I asked him if he used the word politics. I asked him if he used the word politics as synonymous with dirty business, which I felt it should not be. And this is why I think we need more clergymen, more lawyers and professional people, and all types of people getting involved in the mainstream of life, basing it on a principle of honesty and not expediency or compromise. The more time we spend in compromising ourselves, it seems the more time we have to cover up for our mistakes. If we make mistakes, let's admit them and try to be honest looking ahead. And if the parties are going to look backwards constantly, as our beloved Senator Kennedy said, he who clings to even a present that's already dying hasn't much to offer to the future. We have to look ahead. And therefore, I would ask more clergymen, more professional people especially, be willing to stand up and speak out, and all of us to put the cards up on the table, be honest and as honest and uncompromising as possibly we can. Thank you. Okay.
Listening to the speeches delivered over a loudspeaker system from the midst of a large group of originally some 2,000, perhaps now down to 1,500 or 1,000 people gathered here in Grant Park across the street from the Conrad Hilton Hotel. As it grows later, the people gathered here seem to be wandering off. No action has been taken by the troops assembled in two ranks, one on this side of Michigan Avenue and two on this side of Michigan Avenue and two on the far side of Michigan Avenue, both facing this way. They are at parade rest, while earlier they were holding their rifles on their hips in a ready position.
one would guess that nothing more will happen here tonight, but you have heard the statement by at least one speaker that a march on the amphitheater is intended for tomorrow. The most significant development which has occurred tonight, of course, is the introduction of troops. As a matter of fact, the troops now on the scene replace the ranks of blue-helmeted and blue-uniformed Chicago police that were here several hours ago. As a matter of fact, 2 hours ago, police were holding the line that the troops with their M1s and their Jeeps with 50 caliber machine guns mounted on some are holding now. The Jeeps are parked directly in front of the front entrance of the Conrad Hilton.
On this program, we have brought you a part of the story of Chicago from early Tuesday evening, August 27th, to 5 a.m. this morning, August 28th.
You have been listening to A Night in Chicago, a documentary produced in 1968, bringing the events of the Democratic National Convention to Pacifica listeners on From the Vault. In 2005, as part of the Ford Foundation grant that helped preserve the recording you just heard, I had the chance to catch Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman from her busy schedule to sit and talk about this particular recording amidst the sounds of a restaurant with no staff to answer the phone. We hope that you can tune out the ringing to listen to what Amy has to say.
I just think this is classic Pacifica and shows us the importance of the whole Pacifica philosophy, which is providing a forum for people to speak for themselves, going right to where the action is and just hearing those voices. I mean, to be there in Chicago, August 27, 1968, that's what this does, whether it was the broadcast that KPFA did a few months later or now almost 40 years later. You're right there in Lincoln Park. You're listening to Bobby Seale. You're listening to Dick Gregory and the reporters, the Pacifica reporters, who are just describing for you, experiencing it themselves. Their eyes are tearing from the tear gas. You're hearing that the police are moving in, that the police have beaten religious student, seminary student the day before. You hear the anger in the voice of Bobby Seale and Dick Gregory, the rage at not only the police and Mayor Daley in Chicago, but also at the Democratic Party. The resistance that we still see today, the suspicion and the sense that the so-called opposition party is not truly providing the opposition in a time of war. To hear Elsa Knight Thompson just lightly narrating, just walking us through, providing a bit of a roadmap, but the bulk of this documentary is in the streets, in the park, with the reporters themselves experiencing what the protesters are, because no one's immune to the tear gas, and you hear it in their voice. You hear the urgency. This is living history.
Right. What, in terms of 1968, and we've got the insiders and the outsiders, and Pacifica's on the outsiders bringing it inside, what service did it do for Pacifica listeners that the rest of media didn't get? In other words, I always think about the people in Minnesota that didn't know Pacifica existed, didn't know that this was even, didn't even know it could be done, you know, had never experienced it.
There's so much power in being on the outside, and the corporate media is always busy trying to get cozying up to power, and that's inside. And they get a certain perspective. They look out the window. But Pacifica is outside. Pacifica is where the anger is, where the social change is happening, where ultimately, in some cases, what becomes the establishment 40 years later. But at that point, it's people pressing, pushing hard, providing the resistance that, in the end, led to the end of the Vietnam War. And you're hearing it percolate. You're hearing it clash right where it is. And especially for young people, it's so important, because what is the mechanism of social change? When you read your history books, it's sanitized. Often they don't even present any sense of the outside. This is not only presenting a sense of it, it is being there. And this is what social change sounds like. I mean, this is just proves how critical radio is. It's the most imaginative media. It is closest to the story. It's one person carrying a tape recorder and capturing everything around. It's unfiltered. And the power of this, it's not one woman sitting in a studio, Elsa Knight Thompson, now translating and interpreting for us. She's just with an arrow showing us, okay, let's go to this space. Let's go to this speech. Let's go to this reporter on the ground. It's unfiltered. It's media that is immediate. And then we can make our own decisions. We can figure out what is most appealing, what's most interesting, what's most repulsive. That's not the point of the forum, is to make those decisions. That's not the point of the reporter. It's to just provide the information, and then the listener can do with it what they want. They can make their own decisions. I mean, this is a documentation at the grassroots, on the ground, of a grassroots movement that has had tremendous reverberations through history, was tremendously effective. But how did it happen? You hear the clashes right on the ground at that moment. People making decisions, people taking on the police. You have this pacifist movement. Some are pacifists. Definitely nonviolent at that point, being hit with violence. So often in the documentaries of that time, you see the people in the establishment, the Democratic establishment, responding from the inside. But here, it's the people pushing back. It's the people who are having to bear the brunt of the state saying no to them. Ultimately, those who said no to the state are who prevailed.
You've been listening to a special encore presentation of A Night in Chicago, 1968, from the Pacifica Radio Archives. If you'd like a copy of this program or other programs from our 1968 series, give us a call at 1-800-735-0230 or search our collection online at pacificaradioarchives.org. Don't forget to find us on Facebook and Twitter, pacificaradioarchives.org, and join our group, Friends of the Pacifica Radio Archives, on Facebook. From the Vault is produced by Brian DeShazer and Mark Torres, executive producer Brian DeShazer. We thank our partners, collaborators, and grant funders, the American Archive of Public Broadcasting, the Pop-Up Archive, the Internet Archive, UC Berkeley, and the NHPRC at the National Archives. I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening. And to quote my Sean Puffy Combs well-worn T-shirt from the 2004 presidential election, vote or die.